Our regular listeners may be familiar with the audio postcards we've aired from reporter Doug Fine. He usually sends them from some wilderness area where he's pitted himself against the forces of nature. When Doug moved to Alaska 5 years ago, his idea of survival skills was knowing where to find the double-density Macintosh formatted discs at Costco. He soon discovered that getting through an Alaskan winter in a drafty rented cabin meant learning a whole new set of skills. Doug Fine chronicles his experiences in a new book, Not Really an Alaskan Mountain Man. And he joins us now from Alaska, of course. Hi, Doug.
Hey, Jennifer. Thanks so much for having me.
You write about the three crucial steps to Alaskan survival. What are they?
The first one is learning how to provide your own heat. The second one is learning how to provide your own food. And the third and probably most difficult one is learning how to provide your own shelter.
Which you, I take it, learned all of them the hard way?
And I think learned we should keep in quotes at this point.
Where would you say you rank now? Have you mastered these three skills? Or are you still, what is the term there, chichaco?
That's it, chichaco. Yeah, the native word for greenhorn or newcomer, the opposite of a mountain man. Well, I've been here for about 5 years now, and I think if you ask my neighbors if I was a real mountain man, they'd all probably start laughing out loud. But I'm marginally better at stuff like take step two on the food thing. I can competently catch salmon now. I got about 50 salmon this summer, jarred them up, smoked them in a smoker I built myself. So I'll have enough protein for the winter. But, I mean, that's 5 years of work.
Tell us about some of the most difficult moments in the past 5 years.
One that comes to mind as the most harrowing is when I was really trying to learn this step two, this food component of survival. I thought, who better to learn from than folks who have been doing it for 1,000 years, the Inupiaq Eskimos who hunt bowhead whale up on Alaska's North Slope, right by the Arctic Ocean.
Nothing and like so starting big.
Right. I figured, you know, after that, a half-ton moose would seem like no problem. So they invited me out and to come to their whale camp, and that part went great. I actually learned a lot, and whale meat's totally delicious. But what I learned is that there's this whole umbrella set of skills that you need to know in order to survive when you're hunting, such as engine repair and maintenance, for example. I had never ridden a snow machine before. The snow machine I was on was broken down, and I basically had this really scary 18-mile run across pack ice with polar bears all around and a broken-down snow machine. Totally freaked me out.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I think what readers of the book will see is that I make it more dangerous through general incompetence.
You talk in the book about being constantly entranced by the beauty of the wilderness, but I gather real mountain men don't get so distracted.
I think maybe it's not cool in mountain man culture to admit it, you know, to get all teary-eyed all the time. My problem was I just couldn't stop noticing it when I was supposed to be sort of concentrating on chainsawing a tree or something like that, and there'd be a woodpecker on a spruce nearby, and I just wanted to watch it and listen to it, and that's just not, you know, that's not Jack London-esque kind of behavior, Jennifer.
Was there a period of hazing, for lack of a better way to put it? Did you feel that there was some hurdle you had to pass to kind of be accepted by your neighbors? Or despite your lack of knowledge, were you accepted right away?
So that's a really good question. Alaskans, I find, are just so unbelievably generous and welcoming, especially when they realize that someone's not seasonal, that they're really going to try and stick it out for a winter. And so there's a lot of examples in the book and in my experience where people just were unbelievably kind and reached out. But you also know you're being watched. People ask, how long have you been here, the way that people ask, do you have stock options in high-tech circles? And so you know, they know you're a greenhorn and they're watching you. They're not hoping you make a mistake. But there was one point where I was stranded in the wilderness overnight in the winter where I was worried that my pickup in the morning hadn't shown up. And I thought, you know what, maybe this is a test. Maybe my friends are doing this to me on purpose.
I'm intrigued by your talk of your love of the isolation of where you are now in Alaska, but how you like being isolated with internet access. You can go on and I think you say check the Guatemalan election results. I mean, isn't that cheating?
Well, you know what? Alaskans have always been really good at making use of whatever's around them. There's never been anyone, native or non-native, in Alaska who said, hey, this tool is available, but now I'm not going to use it because it'll be cheating. And so Alaska was one of the first places to implement satellite dishes. To all the villages have had satellite TV access for like 30 plus years and stuff like that. So, no, I'm not going to feel guilty about that. I'm just not.
A lot of people who think about Alaska might think about that TV show Northern Exposure. Did any of your experiences there, have they been like that?
Sometimes I feel like a lot of the different characters on Northern Exposure, those familiar with the show will know that there was one guy who came from the East Coast and kind of like was always cold when everybody else was comfortable. And there's a little bit of that with me, of just the adjustment factor. But then there was the Chris in the Morning character. And for a couple of years, I was Doug in the Morning doing the radio from Haines. And really, radio is a lifeline in rural Alaska. People get almost all their news from NPR and from the local news because people just don't have TVs. There's no local television station.
And information can be very important, life or death.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the weather, and a lot of people who contribute to the station contribute because they get the marine weather, and that's their lifeline. If they're fishermen or fisherwoman, they need to know whether or not it's safe to go out on the boat that day.
Do you have any advice for people who might want to make their own great escape to the north there?
Don't be fooled by the high-tech gear that costs hundreds and hundreds of dollars and promises to be waterproof. Again and again in this book, the problem arises where my space-age fibers don't pass the test in the Arctic or the subarctic. Rubber gear, basically, is the only stuff that's truly waterproof. If you learn that early, you'll stay a lot drier than I did.
Doug Fine, his new book is Not Really an Alaskan Mountain Man, and he's also a sometime contributor to All Things Considered on the weekends. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks a lot, Jennifer.
You can read an excerpt from Not Really an Alaskan Mountain Man at our website, npr.org.